1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome to another edition of the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. At Mariners Pod, thanks for being here. Mariners fall in another tough one. They fall to the Tigers in Game 2 of the series. We have a lot to break down with the game, including James Paxton. And, boy, he looked very good. And we'll talk about that here a little bit more in a moment. Also, nice feature from Josh Kearns once again is on the way. Shannon Dreher sits down with Manny Atkins, which is always a fun conversation. That comes up in a few minutes. And also, this was from over the weekend. I didn't have a chance to play it in the first podcast this week. Rick Riz sat down with David Ortiz, had a conversation with Big Poppy, the year that he's retiring and having a monster year along the way. So Rick Riz sits down with Big Poppy. That comes up in a few minutes as well. Meanwhile, for the Mariners, trying to turn around what has been a very difficult stretch. And you look at it, and I think I mentioned this number yesterday, but if I didn't, I think it's worth repeating, because coming into the game yesterday, 9 of the last 10 Mariners losses were by a grand total of 12 runs. 9 losses, 12 runs total. 6 one-run losses and 3 two-run losses is how that equates of their last 10. And now you can add another one to that tally. You can make it 10 of 11 now, 14 runs, because they've added another two-run loss to the mix. A ton of close games, and the Mariners just continue to be on the other end of things during the course of this month. They did, and this is fantastic moving forward, because that's something I talked about yesterday as well, where Hisashi Okuma has really been the only Mariners starter the past 25 games or so that's given the Mariners consistent innings. Outside of Iwakuma, there's only been two other starters going into last night that had pitched 7-plus innings in the last 25 starts, including Iwakuma. So that's a long stretch of not getting a ton of innings from the rest of the rotation. James Paxton, and not only for what we saw last night, but moving forward and him just continuing to look like he's harnessing the ability with the new arm slot and everything else, there's a lot to like about his start yesterday.
The windup and the 1-2 pitch. Fastball and a swing and a miss. Make that a cutter down and in for strike three. Strikes out Upton for the final out of the bottom of the fourth. And it's 1-2-3 go the Tigers in the inning. That is strikeout number 3 for Paxton.
And here's what Paxton had to say about his start yesterday.
Feels good. You know, I feel like I threw the ball really well. Tough lineup. They found some holes there. I made a couple of mistakes late that they capitalized on. And, you know, it was unfortunate we didn't get the win today. But I think it was good. I was able to go deep and, you know, give the bullpen guys some rest today.
You threw a 99 mile per hour fastball in the outside corner to Velez. I mean, can you make a better pitch than that in that situation?
Yeah, that's baseball right there. You know, that stuff's going to happen. And hopefully we get some of those breaks going our way pretty soon.
Saw more of the changeup today, it looked like. How did you want to use that today?
Yeah, you know, the changeups, I've been working on that, you know, since I got here. And he was feeling really good early, and it was keeping them off the fastball and working really well.
How aware were you, and how hard were you trying to get deep into that game?
You know, I'm trying to just pitch my game. You know, that's all I can do out there. If I'm out there thinking about going deep, I'm not gonna stick to my plan. So I was just sticking to the plan that we went over, and I was trying to attack these guys, be really aggressive, and, you know, obviously wanting to go deep. But I think I did that just by being aggressive and staying in the strike zone.
I mean, the fastball is off the charts. It's ridiculous. He touched 100 during the ball game. I mean, he's throwing 98, 99 in his final inning of work. He sat at 97.5 miles per hour, 73 fastballs thrown in total. Man, 15 changeups along the way, 18 cutters. sliders, however you want to list it. It's looking more and more like a slider, but that's how many he threw of those. But his fastball velocity is, you know, there's only one starter throwing harder than him right now, and that's Noah Syndergaard. That's where he is sitting in terms of fastball. It's unbelievable, especially from the left side. I mean, there's only one other starter since 2008 that's even thrown a left-handed starter that's thrown a pitch 100 miles per hour, and that's Chris Sale. It's the list is two, Chris Sale and James Paxton. So this is a very unique skill set from the left side, and he's not all the way there yet with it. He's still trying to fully harness the ability and the command, but man, he looked very good. And I think when you look at the final line from yesterday, I don't think it's as good of an indicator of how really, truly good he was. 7 2/3, 11 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts on 110 pitches. 11 hits, but they were not knocking him all over the yard. I mean, one extra base hit, that was a double. But some bad luck along the way, too. When Detroit took the lead, it's about, and you heard him talking about it just a moment ago, I mean, the pitch could not have been better. 99 miles per hour, and Avilés just somehow gets the bat on the ball, and that's what ends up really costing the Mariners.
And again, the 1-2 pitch, swung on, little tapper along the first baseline. Up of the ball is Lynn. No play at home, no play at first, and a run scores. Romine will score from third. The Tigers have the lead 3-2. By the time Lynn got to it, halfway down the line toward home plate, that ball was going to stay fair.
Yeah, bad luck, stayed fair, run scores. Detroit takes the lead in the eighth, and they win it by a score of 4-2, despite Kyle Seager, who had about as good a sixth inning as you possibly could have, and it started with a two-run jack.
Two out, runner at first. He goes, pitch, swung on, driven deep to right. This might be the one. It's high, it's far, it is gone. Two-run homer, Kyle Seager, and the Mariners have a 2-0 lead. 15th homer for Seager, RBIs 47 and 48. Hey now!
So a two-run bomb there from Seager, and then defensively turned in as good a double play as you will ever see.
Pitch to Martinez, swung on, hit down the third baseline, backhanded on a dive by Seager, goes to second for one, Cano to first, double play! That was gorgeous, diving to the line. Seager grabbed it, got up and threw a strike to Cano, and Robbie relayed to Lynn for the twin killing. To third goes Maben. Wow, that was fabulous.
You just don't see that very often. A full-on dive down the line, immediately fires a rocket to second base. Cano, the quick flip to first, just getting Victor Martinez. A sweet double play. But it would not be enough as Detroit ends up winning the game 4-2. And now Detroit tied with the Mariners record-wise. And the M's still looking to bounce back and try and turn what has been a tough stretch around in every ball game. Just not able to find a way to get wins, especially late in ball games. So Detroit gets the win. And now the Mariners today takes on Detroit in game 3 of the series. Taking the mound today, and I mentioned him the last few days, Hisashi Iwakuma will take the mound. He has been so consistent for the Mariners. He's been giving them 7 innings every time out. It really would be huge if they could get back-to-back 7-plus inning starts. Paxton pitching into the 8th inning. It'd be enormous if they could do that again and kind of reset the bullpen. Iwakuma 6-5, 4.18 ERA. It's not going to be easy, though. Michael Fulmer is going to go for the Tigers. If you haven't been following him, the rookie has been outstanding. 7-2 with a 2.43 ERA. He's just been dynamite for Detroit. You look at his last handful of starts. 5 starts. He's given up 1 earned run in his last 5 starts. 7 2/3 scoreless against Oakland on 3 hits. 7 2/3 scoreless on 2 hits against the Angels. 6 scoreless on 2 hits against the Blue Jays. 6 scoreless on 2 hits against the Yankees. And he actually gave up a run his last time against the Royals. He went 5 2/3, gave up one run on five hits. I mean, his last six starts, he's given up a grand total of two earned runs. He is absolutely rolling. He has been dealing. He's been walking some guys, but he's just not giving up hits at all. And he's not striking out a ton in that stretch 3, 8, 5, 3, and 5. And he's not giving up a ton of home runs. In fact, I just mentioned the two earned runs. Both of those were on solo home runs. So teams just not able to put together rallies against him at all, which, given the hit totals, that's not a big surprise. So, again, Verlander was good yesterday, and the Mariners have their hands full again today with Michael Fulmer, the rookie righty for the Detroit Tigers. All right, you're all set for today. Let's hand things over to Shannon Dreher now. A chance to catch up with Mariners third base coach Manny Acta.
Catching up with Manny Acta. And Manny, I think we were all watching the game last night on TV. A game seven is always something that a lot of excitement. But you spent some time in Cleveland. You know what that meant to those people. You saw LeBron, the sign go up and the sign come down. What were your feelings watching that?
Well, it was exciting. I was, it was very emotional for me because spent 3 years over there, and I know how, you know, they feel and how much they will appreciate having a franchise win a championship for them, especially after all, what they've gone through with the Browns and the Indians and even the Cavs up until last night. And it made it more rewarding, the fact that, you know, LeBron James came back and delivered to his people. It was tough because I was there when he left, and how that town just completely was in shock and disarray and full of dislike for their own guy. But when he came back, I was hoping that he would do what he did last night. And I think, Cleveland deserves that. And it's good because they took that monkey off their back and over 50 years not having a franchise win it, something for them.
I've asked a couple of guys this, and I'm interested in your insight. Most people will break a baseball season down into different parts, and in spring training you're kind of gearing everything toward that start and getting through April, and perhaps a little bit different. And towards the end of the season, you're gearing hopefully up for something. Where are you right now in a season, and how do you coach to what you would call this?
Well, right now, we're fine if you consider, you know, the things that we've gone through, but we have a team in front of us, the Texas Rangers, that they're just doing outstanding, and that's the reason why it looked like we're struggling the way we are. But losing your number one starter obviously doesn't help any team. We lost Felix, which is, he's a guy that we all know, the electricity that he brings for us every 5 days and gives us the opportunity to snap losing streaks and or continue winning streaks. And right now our pitching staff is going through some tough time due to the lack of Felix and also some injuries and the fact that, you know, they're not going as deep as they were going earlier in the year, and that puts a little bit of strain on their bullpen. But I think we're going to be okay. I think these guys, they go out and grind out. One thing, we lost the last three series, and in each of them we had the chance to win it. So we just didn't catch a break or didn't do the right thing. And that's the thing. When you have injuries and you're not at your best, then you need to play almost perfect baseball, and we haven't done that, and we paid for that in Tampa, and we paid for that against Texas at home, and in Boston too, where we left a bunch of guys on bases. But this group comes out every single day. They're optimistic, and we're just about halfway through it, and it's a lot of baseball left. That's what a lot of people don't understand. So hopefully we'll get it back in gear again, and we'll get Felix back and some of those guys that are down right now, and we'll get into our winning ways again.
All right, I got to ask you a fun question here. We'll end it on a fun note. Deho Lee had his first double the other day. You had a unique view of that, I'm sure. What was that like to see that, and what would it take for him to get a triple?
Well, to get a triple, probably somebody's going to crash into a wall, and the other corner guys are not going to be backing up. The double was exciting because we realized that he hadn't even done it in spring training. We're debating if he did in spring training or not. I think he did, but that was a big debate that we had. So it was good to see him that. It was kind of weird to see somebody hit 10 home runs and not have a double. But, you know, he moves around pretty good, you know, for his size. And I'd rather him hit home runs than doubles anytime.
Absolutely. If he does that well, why not? It was a lot of fun to see. Manny, thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
And now another great feature from Josh Kearns.
When Kuma's pitching, then there's a meeting on the mound. Anthony Suzuki will be out there, too. Whether on the field or in the clubhouse, Anthony has been the voice of numerous Japanese players over the years, from Ichiro to Nori Aoki. Surprisingly, though, the Hawaii native actually didn't speak much Japanese when he moved to that country as a teenager.
It was miserable, you know, but overall, you know, I got to live there for about 10 years, and I picked up the language as I got older, and, you know, a lot of the people that I've worked with, that I played with, actually taught me a lot of good and bad Japanese, so worked out well.
So you know when not to use the bad Japanese.
Definitely, yes.
The lifetime baseball player and fan was working with an import-export company doing a lot of baseball business when he got an offer to come to San Diego and try out as a translator. He got the gig. There was just one problem. Spoke a lot of Japanese and pidgin, the Hawaiian variation on English that's far from formal.
You know, when I first started in San Diego, our PR director was so mad because my English was broken. And I told the PR guy, hey, I'm from Hawaii, you know, this is how I've learned the language. And he had to fix a lot of my terms and all that. And it was hard.
But things got a lot easier over the years, and one day, Anthony got a call to come north to Seattle and work with one of the game's biggest stars. Idol Ichiro.
In Japan, he's known as, you know, the god of baseball. Everyone, you know, looks at him as the idol, including myself. I mean, I played outfield, and he was a star. He was a stud, and, you know, it was amazing to work and to be close to this guy, to, you know, pick his brain and to know what he's like, you know, how he operates, how he's wired, all that. It was great.
There's just one thing. Ichiro was and remains a global star, and Anthony found himself facing several dozen TV crews and reporters every night.
And when you interpret, it's not about just words. You have to understand how they feel, and you have to express their feelings in your own words. And that's not easy because everything is done on the fly.
And it's a job that doesn't stop at the ballpark.
You have to take care of their family. You have to take care of off-field stuff because that's the only way you can gain their trust. I believe that's how I approach it. You take care of them as a human being.
Being a human being, Anthony admits he's made more than his fair share of mistakes, although he wouldn't tell me what they were.
Have you ever screwed something up really bad?
Yes, I have, yes. We all make mistakes, you know, but you learn from your failures. I mean, I tell all the players, you know, speaking the language, it's not easy. It's their second language, being at their age. You make mistakes, but it's about, okay, making mistakes, not being ashamed of that. Because once you start to feel that way, you get back in your shell and you stop trying to learn.
Tell me what I say, tell me what I say right now.
One thing we learned over the years was Ichiro actually spoke pretty good English. Many of the longer-serving foreign players do as well, but Anthony says it's much more comfortable for them to stick with their native language and let him ultimately decide how it comes across.
For the most part, I stay consistent and honest with what they say. I don't try to change the subject or any of that. Sometimes you do kind of have to sugarcoat because, you know, the nuance are different. You know, the way we approach media, the way the Americans approach media is different, you know, in general. So that's just, you have to kind of have a good idea of, you know, what you're doing, what you're saying for the player, because you don't want to hurt the player when he's not intending to do that.
It's a lot of pressure. And with it, Anthony admits he often takes his work home with him, even carrying over to his dreams.
You know, sometimes it's in English, sometimes it's in Japanese, sometimes I don't even know what language it is. So...
But you can rest assured that when he's speaking for Kuma or some of the other players, very little gets lost in translation. For the Mariners Sunday Magazine, I'm Josh Kearns reporting.
Tell me what I say. Tell me what I say right now. Tell me what I say.
And here's Rick Riz with Big Poppy.
David, you're having an incredible year, 2016, your final year in the big leagues. How tough is it going to be for you to walk away from a great season like this? You already said you're going to retire before the season got underway. You've been amazing this year.
You know what? It's a blessing, man. You know, like, I truly get prepared every off season because I know my responsibility. I know that this ball club count with myself big time. And I still train and go at it like I used to 10, 15 years ago, even if my body doesn't allow me to or don't want me to do it. But my mentality is that train the way I can come here and put a good season together. I know that people always talk about age, but let me tell you, age, to me, age always gonna be a number. And it's because as a human, we limit ourselves of doing things just because your body doesn't want you to do it. Yeah. In my case, you can ask the trainer here, you can ask the people that work with us how I try to keep up with things. And having all these younger players around me is something that kind of pushed me and tried to keep me at that stage. I know that my body doesn't feel the same. That's why I'm retiring after this season. I'm, you know, it's hard. But the good thing is that I have a group of guys around me that are doing good too. And that kind of take a lot of pressure off of me. And at the same time, that kind of like help me out somehow, some way, for the pitchers to not just worry about me much. Yeah. So that, with the combination of knowing that I'm retiring after this season, it's funny how that worked. But when you don't have worries in your mind, yeah, like every year I had to worry about, I got to do well, I got to do good so that I can, you know, follow up with the following year, you know, probably get contract for the next year because I'm a free agent or whatever. That's not my worry about now. And everything is coming out great, you know, everything is coming out good. Hopefully continue. Hopefully we walk into the playoff at some point and we end up winning a World Series. So that'll be a real happy ending.
Well, I tell you what, Big Papi, you're having an incredible year, final year in the big leagues. You put together a Hall of Fame career. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for being so nice to me during my career. All this year, every time I come to Seattle, you guys always being so nice. You guys always brought a lot of good memories to me when I was part of that organization and all the stuff. That's something that it's a good accomplishment, and it's an honor for me to be part of what you guys are.
I love Big Papi. David, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
See you later!